prove me right, I know that in this case, the links are very serious. And it is sufficient for anybody interested in what's going on in Ecuador to ask the question, who killed Rubén Cherres? And we will have clear answers that will help us respond who killed Fernando Villavicencio.
Well, Andrés Arauz, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Ecuadorian politician, economist, running for vice president of Ecuador, along with presidential candidate Luisa González. She's the only woman running for president in the 2023 Ecuador election. In 2021, Arauz ran for president and lost to Guillermo Lasso. Go to democracynow.org in Spanish for our Spanish interview that we'll conduct just after this show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Sire Rhodes. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
I'm Molly, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
Did you know that KBOO is streaming live on the web? Well, you do now. Just type www.kboo.fm, click on Listen Live, and you've got us. Just another example of how KBOO 90.7 FM Portland works for you. It's your community radio.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, extreme temperatures mean a state of emergency in Portland and Multnomah County. Search efforts in the wake of the Maui wildfire continue. And in national news, a judge rules in favor of Montana youths in a landmark climate case. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, August 14th, 2023. I'm Michelle Coppola. Well, if you didn't already notice, it is extremely hot outside, so no surprise, Portland and Multnomah County officials have declared a state of emergency due to the excessive heat. The state of emergency is expected to last through Wednesday as forecasters predict record-setting temperatures across Oregon. Weather models suggest areas from Salem to Eugene could reach 108 to 110 degrees. Portland was expected to reach 106 degrees under clear skies today and 103 tomorrow. Several cooling centers are open in the Portland metro area, welcoming pets and people with food and water from 1 to 8 p.m. Later in the week, Oregon is expected to receive some relief from the heat as air moves from sea to land, bringing clouds and fog to the Oregon coast and likely bringing a few shallow marine clouds to the metro area. Dr. Teresa Everson, the Multnomah County Health Officer, made recommendations as to how to avoid heat-related symptoms such as heat exhaustion and heat stroke. She said, quote, "We advise folks to drink more water than usual and avoid strenuous sports or outdoor work during the hottest part of the day," end quote. Across the metro area, people can find relief at their local public libraries and community centers during the day. In Multnomah County, three daytime cooling centers are open until 8 p.m. They are Multnomah County East and Cook Plaza in Gresham, as well as the Old Town Cooling Center in Portland. The Lloyd Center Mall will also serve as a cooling space until 7 p.m. No one will be turned away from cooling centers, and as we mentioned earlier, pets are welcome. TriMet will transport anyone going to or from a cooling center for free, and anyone needing additional transportation help is advised to call 211 for assistance. For those looking to local lakes and rivers to cool off, do be aware there are still toxic algae blooms in the Willamette River in Portland and off Sauvie Island. Specific cooling center locations, hours, and stipulations can be found at each of the Metro County's respective websites. You can also Google Portland, Oregon cooling centers to get that information. Well, that excessive heat warning isn't the only one Oregonians are looking at. The National Weather Service has now issued a red flag warning for wildfire risk as well. It lasts until 11 p.m. tonight, and it's rated severe, meaning there's a significant threat to life or property. The forecast for the Central Oregon Coast Range, the Willamette Valley, and the Clark County lowlands calls for low humidity and wind with very hot temperatures. All of that spells the perfect conditions for a wildfire to start and spread rapidly. Residents are advised to be extra careful with potential ignition sources, especially in grassy areas. That includes securing safety chains on trailers, not driving over dry grass or vegetation, and avoiding yard work near dry vegetation. It also means postponing target shooting and not flicking lit cigarettes out of the car. Officials also say to report any fire, smoke, or unsafe activity that could lead to a fire. Speaking of the weather, a group of young people have won a landmark climate case against the state of Montana. That case is Held versus the state of Montana. In it, the group alleges that Montana violated their state constitutional right to a, quote, clean and healthful environment by promoting fossil fuels. There's a specific provision in the Montana Environmental Policy Act that says the state cannot consider the climate impacts of energy projects. A judge has now ruled that provision as unconstitutional. It's a rare victory for climate activists who have been trying to use the court system to advance environmental justice for years. The lawsuit was on behalf of six Montanans aged 15 to 22, and it's the first of its kind to make it to trial. The Constitution of Montana did give an advantage to the plaintiffs as it guarantees a right to a clean and healthful environment and says the state and individuals are responsible for maintaining and improving the environment for present and future generations. The plaintiffs testified to how the climate crisis had impacted them. One with asthma described himself as a, quote, prisoner in my own home when isolating with COVID during a period of intense wildfire smoke. Montana has 5,000 gas wells, 4,000 oil wells, 4 oil refineries, and 6 coal mines. Together, the court found that Montana alone is responsible for as much carbon dioxide as is produced by Argentina, the Netherlands, or Pakistan. The ruling is energizing to the youth environmental movement, who currently have cases pending in 4 other states. Hunger is an issue for kids in Washington State. Even as the school year starts again and students get access to free meals, 1 in 8 children in the state faces hunger at home. Eric Tegedoff has the details.
The new school year is around the corner, and one issue in the spotlight in Washington State is child hunger. Even with free breakfast and lunch students are offered at school, kids still go hungry throughout the year. 1 in 8 children faces food insecurity in the state, according to Feeding America. Nichelle Hilton is the founder and head of Backpack Brigade, an organization based in King County. She says students may have meals at school, but that can change at the end of the school week.
Then we start talking about weekend hunger, which is our specialty, which means if they're relying on the free breakfast and lunch, they can sometimes go from Friday lunch to Monday breakfast without eating.
More will get access to free or reduced price meals starting this school year. Under a bill passed in the state legislature this year, elementary schools where 40% or more of students qualify for free or reduced price meals will be required to provide free meals to all students. Hilton says the best solutions to hunger meet families where they are.
Whether that's social justice, whether that's education, whether that's supportive services, whether that's food stamps, whether that's childcare, there are so many different ways to help that individual family unit get out of where they're at.
30% of households receiving food stamps have children present. Hilton notes that families who make too much money to qualify for food assistance might still struggle to afford meals because their incomes are so low. She says the country needs to do more to ensure that no family goes hungry. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Anti-government militant Ammon Bundy was arrested recently with a warrant from a defamation case. Bundy is well known for leading the armed occupation of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge back in 2016. He was arrested on contempt of court charges in Gem County, Idaho. Bundy has had an active arrest warrant since mid-April because he refused to show up to legal proceedings for nearly a year over a civil lawsuit filed by St. Luke's Health System. His bail is set at $10,000. Gem County Sheriff Donnie Wonder was initially hesitant to serve Bundy. He says that he didn't want to risk harm coming to his deputies, quote, over a civil issue. Idaho's largest health system sued Bundy and his associate, Diego Rodriguez, for defamation. They accused the hospital of kidnapping Rodriguez's infant grandson, who had been taken into care for extreme malnourishment. Bundy and Rodriguez called for protests over the child's hospitalization, resulting in threats called into the hospital's switchboard and a lockdown at St. Luke's downtown Boise campus. An Ada County jury sided with St. Luke's last month, forcing Bundy, Rodriguez, and their respective businesses to pay the hospital $52.5 million. After months of ignoring court orders and filing trespassing complaints against people hired to serve him legal notices, Bundy was arrested. A lawyer for St. Luke's told the Daily Beast, quote, Mr. Bundy could easily get out of jail now by paying an extremely low bond. He is not paying the bond because he wants to use his arrest and time in jail to further a false narrative that he is some kind of martyr, end quote. Search efforts are increasing on Maui as teams forage through the ash and rubble for human remains. Nearly a week ago, a massive fire started at Lahaina, Maui, spreading rapidly because of dry conditions and strong winds up to 81 miles per hour. Maui County officials said that the fire has been 85% contained as of Sunday evening. The death toll has now climbed to 96 people and is expected to grow since hundreds remain unaccounted for. This is the deadliest U.S. wildfire in a century and the deadliest natural disaster in Hawaii's history. An estimated 1,100 residents are in shelters, and about 500 hotel rooms have been made available for those displaced by fires. Over 2,700 structures were destroyed in Lahaina alone, an estimated damage of $5.6 billion. The governor has ordered a comprehensive review into the cause of the fire and how state and local agencies could have averted the disaster. Despite the warnings of fire weather, the island's main electric utility did not turn off power. Invasive grasses may also be fueling fires in Hawaii. They outcompete native grasses and grow quickly after it rains. That means a lot of wildfire fuel. In an interview, Jeff Hickman, a spokesperson for Hawaii's Department of Defense, explained that the search crews are working meticulously in their search and rescue efforts. He said that they are, quote, going street by street, block by block between cars, and soon they'll start to enter buildings, end quote. At least 400 workers from the Federal Emergency Management Agency are now in Maui, as well as a search and rescue team with dogs from the Los Angeles County Fire Department. Search teams have mapped out the disaster zone and currently have covered only about 3% of the area. With more on the death toll in Maui as it rises and former President Donald Trump facing another legal battle, as well as a new law in Idaho. We'll have all those stories with Alex Gonzalez now on 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Sadly, tragically, in this situation, those sirens likely did not go off. The warning signals that were on cell phones, we had no cell coverage.
After walking through the streets of Lahaina, Hawaii Representative Jill Takuda told Face the Nation that words can't describe the catastrophe. She says the alarm sirens seemed not to have worked, and many cell phone warnings didn't go through. The Maui wildfires have killed more than 90, the deadliest U.S. wildfires in more than a century. During a news conference Saturday, Hawaii Governor Josh Green pointed to global warming.
This is the first time we've ever experienced a wildfire in the context of these dry conditions, global warming, and with a hurricane that's just passing us.
Vice President Kamala Harris expressed the administration's concern about the loss of life.
The president and I are deeply concerned about what is happening in Hawaii and in Maui in particular, and we are monitoring it closely.
Former President Donald Trump attended the Iowa State Fair over the weekend along with other presidential hopefuls. Despite felony charges stemming from his attempt to overturn the 2020 election, he stood by statements that the contest was rigged.
You know, we did great in 2016. We won. We did much better. I hate to say this. We did much better in 2020. The election was rigged.
Former Vice President and 2024 presidential hopeful Mike Pence was also at the Iowa State Fair. Someone in the crowd asked Pence why he committed treason on January 6, 2020.
I mean, look, there's almost no idea more un-American than the notion that any one person could pick the American president. I mean, the American presidency belongs to the American people and the American people alone.
Pence added that Trump asked him to choose him over his oath to the Constitution. Pence says he chose the Constitution and always will. In Georgia, the Fulton County District Attorney is expected to present a case for charges over election interference to a grand jury there. Georgia election official Gabriel Sterling told ABC's This Week that Trump is making himself a martyr as he faces what could be his fourth set of indictments. And in Idaho, a new law now requires proof of residency before registering to vote. Supporters say it standardizes the process, but groups challenging it in court say it makes registration particularly hard for people who don't have driver's licenses. Kendall Schaber with the League of Women Voters of Idaho says it also makes it harder to get referendums on the ballot.
Anything that makes it more difficult for people to register adversely affects the petition process.
Babe Vote and the League of Women Voters of Idaho have both suspended voter registration drives because of the new law. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
A compact between 10 states will make it easier for teachers to work after they move. Oregon was the 10th state to join that compact, and Grant Button has more on the story.
An agreement between 10 states will make it easier for teachers' credentials to transfer when they move. The Interstate Teacher Mobility Compact includes Oregon and will meet this fall to decide on the qualifications for the program. Head of the Oregon Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, Dr. Anthony Rosiles, says a compact removes steps for teachers who move between the states involved.
We're trying to take out some of those procedural barriers that would allow the person to be able to come to Oregon and start working right away.
The compact could help ease teacher shortages around the country. It was originally started as a way to allow military spouses to start working more quickly after moving. Colorado, Florida, Kentucky, and Nevada are also involved. Legislation to join is pending in other states, including California. Oregon was the 10th state to join, which activated the compact. Adam Deersing with the National Center for Interstate Compacts within the Council of State Government says it was a rocky road to passage in the state.
There were broad legislative walkouts at the end of the session in Oregon this year, and so it was a down-to-the-wire passage in Oregon.
Deersing says supporters of the compact don't claim it will solve the teacher shortage. But he says some teachers may have completed their education requirements decades earlier, and it doesn't always make sense to have them train all over again when they move.
For many, that time cost and that physical cost is too much to remain in the profession, and so we hope that the Teacher Compact will help to keep some of those teachers that want to be in the profession in the profession.
For KBOO News and the Public News Service, I'm Grant Bunn.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. Then at 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, Prison Pipeline. And at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Your weather forecast, if you didn't hear earlier, we are under a state of emergency, an excessive heat warning, and red flag warning right now due to the heat. We will cool to 69 overnight, and it'll be sunny and hot again tomorrow with a high of 103. Today in history, Franklin D. Roosevelt signed the Social Security Act, creating a supplemental government pension system for the retired. The quote of the day is from Archbishop Desmond Tutu, a human rights activist who won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1984 for his efforts in resolving and ending apartheid. He said, quote, "Forgiveness is like this. A room can be dank because you have closed the windows, you've closed the curtains. But the sun is shining outside, and the air is fresh outside. In order to get that fresh air, you have to get up and open the window and draw the curtains apart." ¶¶ The Native American Journalist Association will take on a new name after a vote from members. With that story and more, it's Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas from KMBA in Anchorage, Alaska, filling in for Antonia Gonzalez. Members of the Native American Journalists Association voted last week to change the organization's name to the Indigenous Journalists Association. The name change received more than 60% of votes. Members had various opinions on whether or not to change the name. Longtime member Roy Dick from Yakima Nation in Washington was against the name change.
They're trying to make it international, and we're used to what we work for. Like myself, I'm a radio man, and you know, everybody turns the radio on to hear what I have to say, and I tell them I'm part of NAJA. And they ask me, what's NAJA? And that's Native American Journalist, and that includes radio, TV, and print. And to me, that identifies us as a special group of people.
Other members, like first-year member Darla Panes, an intern with Eagle Feather News outside of Saskatchewan, voted to change the name.
It included more Indigenous people from, because there's Indigenous people from Canada, the U.S., you know, across the ocean. So I thought it made us seem more inclusive for other Indigenous people. That's why I voted to change the name. Not to step on anyone's heels or toes.
The vote took place as members from the U.S. and Canada were celebrating 40 years of the organization in Winnipeg last week. The University of Oregon and the Coquille Indian Tribe are partnering up on research to reduce carbon emissions. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
The UO has a five-year, $3 million grant to study ways to cut climate-changing carbon. It'll incorporate environmental findings, artificial intelligence, and Indigenous knowledge to help address challenges to the environment. Jason Yonker is chief of the Coquille Tribe, as well as UO Assistant Vice President and an advisor on government-to-government relations for the administration. He says it's important for traditional ecological knowledge to be included.
Our whole world is warming up. That's affecting the water. It's affecting our salmon. It's affecting everything. And what can a small little tribe from the southern Oregon coast do to help be an example for other people?
The National Science Foundation-funded study aims to involve more Indigenous perspectives and offer a range of carbon-cutting actions that communities can choose to carry out. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
Advocates urged President Biden to rapidly phase out fossil fuels and stop endorsing false climate solutions like hydrogen and carbon capture and sequestration during a recent visit to New Mexico. Members of the New Mexico No False Solutions Coalition unfurled banners that said, quote, keep it in the ground and invest in renewables on I-25 southbound en route to the president's stop in Belen, New Mexico. Under President Biden, the Department of Energy is promoting hydrogen across the country. New Mexico, along with other states, is seeking federal funding to build out large-scale hydrogen projects. In June, NMNFS sent a letter to the Department of Energy urging it to reject New Mexico's application for federal hydrogen funding, highlighting climate, environmental justice, health, and safety concerns. NMNFS member Sophia Martinez warned that a hydrogen economy will lock in dirty fossil fuels in the state in a time when New Mexico needs to rapidly transition away from oil and gas, and said, quote, first it was nuclear and now hydrogen is coming into New Mexico. We are tired of being the testing grounds and sacrifice zones for untested sources of energy, end quote. According to the group, climate fuel disasters have had massive human and financial costs. The group says last year alone, communities in the U.S. experienced 18 separate weather and climate disasters, causing almost $170 billion in damages and almost 500 direct or indirect fatalities. About 95% of hydrogen is produced using fossil fuels. I'm Jill Freitas.
Newly released national data underscores concerns about the mental health crisis in the United States. Outreach organizations stress that despite care gaps across the country, there are resources to turn to in a crisis situation. Those concerned about a friend or loved one are urged to speak up. Mike Moen has more.
New provisional data from the CDC show that nearly 50,000 Americans died by suicide last year. The record numbers are leading to renewed calls for those in crisis to seek help and for those around them to take action. Last year's all-time high for suicides in the U.S. is part of a two-year increase in these deaths following declines in 2019 and 2020. Sue Abderholden is executive director of the Minnesota affiliate of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. She says at the start of the pandemic, people were supporting each other even while social distancing. But she says it appears the effects of that isolation are beginning to show.
Not everyone's going back to work. Kids are finally back in school. But, you know, there's been a lot of disruption in people's lives. And when we're not feeling connected to other people and we're feeling that loneliness, that can actually, you know, lead to suicidal thoughts.
If a person has those thoughts, they're urged to call or text the revamped National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is now 988. A trained counselor can alert a crisis response team if needed. And if you're concerned about a person you know, experts say it's okay to ask them if they're contemplating suicide because it may reduce such ideation knowing that someone cares about them. And Dr. Holden says it's worth reminding the public about the red flags that often show when someone is having suicidal thoughts.
For example, taking some dangerous risks. Maybe they're, you know, driving fast or they're drinking too much. You're seeing kind of mood swings, right, from being maybe angry and sad to all of a sudden being calm.
She says a person all of a sudden giving away personal items might be another warning sign. NAMI says Minnesota has done a good job supporting its 988 call center, but like the rest of the country, it still faces a broader shortage of mental health providers. That makes it longer for people to wait for follow-up appointments, possibly contributing to some of the higher suicide rates. Mike Moen, Minnesota News Connection.
The gap in wealth between the highest and lowest earners in the country is large. Financial institutions, however, could help shrink it. Eric Tegedoff spoke with the president of Verity Credit Union in Seattle to learn more.
The United States wealth gap is a persistent and complex problem. Financial institutions could help chip away at it. The top 10% of income earners own 69% of the wealth, while the lowest 50% have less than 3%. Head of Verity Credit Union in Seattle, Tonita Webb, says the issue is even greater between black and white Americans. Black people have a long history of being denied loans from banks and other financial institutions. Webb says the first step is for these institutions to understand what communities need.
Listening to communities to figure out where their roadblocks are, where they have run into challenges, and be able to work at changing the system based off the feedback and co-create solutions together.
Webb says financially underserved communities have lacked the ability to grow generational wealth, which increases the country's wealth gap over time. She says institutions could also change the way credit scores are calculated. Credit scores like FICO are used to determine someone's eligibility for a loan. But Webb says Verity Credit Union has been using an AI program for the last year to calculate it in a different way.
It takes into consideration reputation, how long you've been at a job, how you pay your rent on time, and other things that FICO doesn't necessarily capture.
Webb says using this new system, her credit union has seen an increase in lending to people who were previously denied. She says financial institutions can also shrink the wealth gap by increasing homeownership. Programs that require little or no down payment and assist with interest rates can get more families into homes. Webb says all of this is personal for her because she came from an underserved community.
I want to change that for underserved communities and be able to put families in the position to leave something for their kids to build upon. And that is what we're missing.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, August 14th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Grant Button. The producer and engineer is the energetic Althea Billings. Special thanks to Alex Gonzalez, Jill Freitas, Eric Tegedoff, Suzanne Potter, and Mike Moen. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola. All of our KBOO programs, by the way, including the evening news, are supported by our members, wonderful people like you. We cannot do it without you. And if you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio and have a great night. Stay cool.
From the Coast Range Association, this is Coast Range Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gaskill. Today we'll be hearing my interview with Katie Volke, Executive Director of the North Coast Land Conservancy. The North Coast Land Conservancy, or NCLC, has been working to conserve land along the northern Oregon coast and Coast Range for nearly 40 years. Katie's an absolute wealth of knowledge, and she speaks really eloquently about her work and philosophy. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. If you have any thoughts or feedback, my email is michael@coastrange.org. Well, Katie Volke, welcome to Coast Range Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
So just to get started, could you give folks kind of a broad overview of North Coast Land Conservancy and what you all do?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. So North Coast Land Conservancy is one of several local land trusts that serve Oregon. There's land trusts all over the nation. And what we do as a land trust is protect land. We create nature preserves. We take care of it for its habitat values, for the wildlife, for the water. And we do that on the north coast of Oregon. And our service area is the Columbia River down to Siletz Bay. We've been around for close to 40 years now. So it's been a big period of land conservation in the nation during that time. And so we've been a part of that movement.
Wonderful. And how many acres, I don't know if this is even how you would characterize it, but how many acres do you all manage or own or in some ways have a part in conserving?
Yeah, so there's a number of ways that we might do land conservation. The most common is directly through our ownership. And so we work with willing private landowners. That might be a farmer, that might be a residential owner, that might be a forest owner. And we raise funds, public